Every Tuesday we highlight many of the not-for-profit organizations in the city and ones that are, in my view, really significant difference makers in what's actually happening. We often wonder why things are the way they are and what is actually influencing it. And a lot of times the not-for-profit community doesn't get its due. And so I've really enjoyed spending time with folks on Tuesday. And today's going to be no different because I'm a big believer in Youth Force NOLA. Kate Swinburne joins us, co-founder, president, and CEO. And recently named as Woman of the Year by the New Orleans City Business. Congratulations to you, Kate, and welcome to the show.
Thank you, Noel. I'm excited to be back with you.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. I think this is, correct me if I'm wrong, the 11th year of Youth Force NOLA. Congratulations on that, and I understand that we have some exciting news and some exciting things happening there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, this is our 11th summer of providing Youth Force NOLA internships. We start tomorrow, so we are scheduled to have over 200 public high school students start their training with us downtown at the Pan American Building. And we could not be more excited.
So talk to us about what the students will actually experience and what it actually means after they've completed your program.
Yes. So the internship program is all encompassing. There is a few weeks of work readiness training where they learn business etiquette. They learn essential soft skills. They learn about our regional industries. And then they start their actual internship experiences. A few weeks into June, they're placed with over 80 companies around the region where they are doing projects. They are contributing to the company's bottom line, and they are also getting hands-on experience in the world of work. And a Youth Force internship leaves a young person with a stronger sense of, who they are and what they want to do after high school. It puts money in their pocket. We're able to pay the interns thanks to the city of New Orleans. And it gives them a real leg up in whatever they do after high school, whether that be going on to college or continuing straight into a career pathway in the region.
80 companies participating, that corporate partnership with what's happening in the city, I think, is oftentimes understated and has actually, I think, contributed to a significant change in the way that we view ourselves. And I think, we have become bigger and better cheerleaders for ourselves as a result of that. Talk to us a little bit more about their participation and why it's so important.
Yeah. Well, we have, just tremendous companies around the region who are, who in part of this is they have workforce hiring needs. They've got talent gaps. And where better to find your long-term talent than locally here in the region? And I know we have Children's Hospital, Manning Family Children's is scheduled to host 16 interns this summer, so I want to celebrate that. Ochsner Health is also a longtime champion. They're scheduled to host, I think, approaching 20 interns across multiple campuses and clinics. Entergy New Orleans, I'm looking at their building now. They're a huge champion partner, and they tend to host multiple interns over multiple job sites. And I could keep listing, but the bottom line for them is both, the work they get and the projects they get from interns in the summer and the longer term prospects for regional hires. I always say you can't apply for a job you don't know exists. And so participating as a Youth Force internship employer partner helps put your company in our young people's decision set and helps put your career pathways in their appreciation of, what they might want to be when they grow up.
You know, it's interesting. I had the opportunity to talk to the cohorts for the Greater New Orleans Inc. Program. And I said to the kids, you know, you're really special. You're getting a free audition. You've already made the cut, you know, and you've already the opportunity's been created. You are in a very influential position right now, not only for yourself, but for the folks that are going to follow you. So make the most of it. I mean, you know, when you think about it, and that's how I kind of view these things. It's like you're getting an audition that no one else has.
Yeah,
there's a very small number of kids that, you know, in the overall scheme of things, get this opportunity, right?
Right. You're getting an audition. This is performance-based hiring. You're also growing your Rolodex. And I know, I don't know the last time I actually saw a physical Rolodex on anybody's desk, but, you know, you're adding those new context cards to your phone.
I miss them, quite frankly.
Yeah. I mean, there's sort of the value of just like pulling that card out and dialing the number. But, you know, you're adding those contact cards to your phone. You're adding that, you know, to your email inbox and your LinkedIn. This is helping our young people build that network of professionals who they can then call upon for insights, referrals, job opportunities, and more, you know, all while they're still in high school in the case of Youth Force interns.
And, you know, when you talk to the companies, I mean, what do you hear from them? Because, you know, one of the things I mentioned to the kids as well, is you have an opportunity to leave a legacy. And, you know, and I could see that there were some folks, some in there that were kind of like, what does that mean? I said, how do you want to be remembered? You know, and if you put in, as you talked about, the soft skills, showing up for work on time, being courteous, being respectful, thinking out of the box, you know, having some unique opportunities to be a difference maker for that day. You know, as they remember you, that's a legacy that you leave. And like you said, you know, you get that, you increase that Rolodex. And when you call back, they tend to remember exactly who you are and why you are.
Yes. I mean, we have terrific stories from partner companies, intern supervisors. We have intern supervisors writing college recommendation letters. We have intern supervisors sharing their former interns, you know, looking for work posts on LinkedIn. We have, you know, oh, remember that joke from that intern, right? You know, because what we hear from intern supervisors and from the companies is, you know, not just the project or projects that the intern contributed over the summer, but also companies benefit hosting interns across a couple of other ways. One is fresh perspectives. You know, for some of our companies, they might have an aging workforce, or their employee demographics skews one way, and bringing in Youth Force NOLA interns from, you know, neighborhoods and high schools across the city, they are bringing in fresh perspective, new ideas, and insights that company might not otherwise have access to. Companies also love hosting Youth Force interns for people manager growth, right? You've got these early career professionals who say that they want a direct report. They want to become a people manager. How better to grow your people managers at your company, or your future people managers at your company, than have them supervise a high school intern first, right? So they get some experience as a people manager. And I guess another reason that we hear from companies that they love hosting Youth Force interns is they love New Orleans. Both the companies and our interns love New Orleans. And so having this experience of hosting a high school student or a set of high school students from New Orleans is just a great big, you know, sort of virtuous cycle of supporting our community and being part of our community. So it's a win-win on a number of fronts, you know, both for the intern and for the company. And so we've got over 90% of companies come back for the following summer to host again and again.
You said something that's very interesting that I totally missed, and I love the way that you put it. You know, for the kids, this is experiential learning, right, for the young adults. But for the company, as you point out, people managers, it's experiential learning for them as well. And right. I never put that together, but I love that, that, you know, these companies are thinking in that realm, in that aspect.
Yes, yes. One of our values at Youth Force is learner mindset. And I think we really push ourselves that we expect our values to show up in the work that happens with and for young people and in the work that happens with and for adults. And so I do. It's a really sort of virtuous cycle between, you know, intern supervisors growing and our young people growing too.
Because you really want to be in touch, right, with the next generation. What are they thinking? What are their work habits? What's the best way to develop it? I remember at some point in time in the sheriff's office, we had to kind of change our training. It wasn't really about accommodation. It was just the way that young adults come to us, they learn differently. And in a different fashion. And we were kind of antiquated in our approach, quite frankly. And if you don't stay current, you're not going to stay relevant.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think we've all seen some sort of joke or cartoon or comic strip or whatever, you know, that's like to the tune of, you know, kids these days, you know, with a groan or whatever attached to it. Whatever that generation is, you know, when I was in my early 20s, I was the young generation. I was the roll your eyes about generation. You know, there's always a question of how do we best integrate young people, the new career folks. What does that look like? It sort of just happens with every generation. They're inevitably the next generation thinks differently, acts differently, et cetera. And it can be a real crisis in a workplace if an organization does not sort of think about explicitly, thoughtfully, and strategically how are you going to include and integrate the next generation in your workplace. And with that, when you do it thoughtfully and when you do it well, you can get to all the greater performance across your team, and you just can have this sort of, you know, all the vibrancy and insights and fun, right? It can be fun when you get through the awkwardness of intergenerational work. It can be a lot of fun.
So there are some needs that you guys have at Youth Force NOLA, and you know, I have a very proactive listening audience. They love to get involved with some of these programs. What is the best way for them to connect to you guys, and what are your needs at the present time?
Yes, I have two big calls to action today, Noel. Thank you for letting me put them out there. One is we are still looking to pin down a few more internship placements. The placements will start in about 3 weeks. And so if folks are able to host a Youth Force intern from late June through July, we can train your intern supervisors and so forth. They can email us at employers@youthforcenola.org. The second request is professional dress. As our interns prepare for their workplace experiences, we know that they're going to need to dress for the industry. In some cases, that's sort of full business. In some cases, that's business casual. But given that our young people tend to wear uniforms during the school year, they don't have a closet full of whatever those professional clothes might be. So we accept donations of gently used professional clothing and then have something of a closet for them to shop from while they're at training. So we can take those clothing donations starting tomorrow at the Pan Am building at 601 Poydras on the 11th floor, or they can email us and we're happy to pick it up from their porch. And again, they can email us at employers@youthforcenola.org or youthforce@youthforcenola.org. Either one works.
And what floor, 11th floor at the Pan Am building, and what hours do y'all accept?
Yeah, we'll be great. Good question. We'll be accepting donations between 8:30 a.m. and 3:30 p.m.
Okay. Awesome. I've got a host of ties.
All right. We'll take them. We'll take them.
They're good looking ties. They're not. I bet. I don't wear ties anymore.
I know. That's one of the fun things. It's the people who say, I work from home now. I don't need half this stuff, right? So we are happy to, you know, if you work from home now than you didn't used to, or you lost a bunch of weight, whatever your circumstances, we can take your gently used professional clothes.
Absolutely. Well, congratulations again to you about being Woman of the Year by City Business.
Thank you.
That is quite the honor. And we really are, you know, big supporters of Youth Force. Nola, I love what you do. I really enjoy speaking with you. I wish we could talk more often, quite frankly, because I love hearing these stories. They're just great stories, you know, about developing our kids right here, the place that we call home. If we're not going to be the big cheerleader, who will be, right?
Right. Absolutely. Newell, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Kate. Kate Swinburne, co-founder, president, and CEO of Youth Force NOLA. Tomorrow at the Pan Am building, 11th floor, if you have some business clothes that you think might work for our young adults, 8:30 to 3:30 at the 11th floor. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Equinor Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. Folks, there's a move afoot in the state legislature, House Bill 906 by Representative Billings, that provides that the party primary elections at each party, Democrat Party, Republican Party, can choose whether or not non-affiliated voters can participate and vote in either the Republican or Democratic primary. That's a huge change from where we have been in this state for a long, long time. And it seems to be moving really fast. And I talked a little bit about this in my monologue early this morning. And we're joined by Pearson Cross, director of the School of Behavior and Social Sciences at the University of Louisiana Monroe. Pearson, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So give us a little bit of the background. What is really driving this at this present time? It seems as though party controls seems to be top of mind for each party right now.
I think that's right. You know, we live in an era where partisan struggle seems to define our era. So I think both parties are thinking they want a little more control over who the candidates for their party are. You know, if you stick with a jungle primary, lots of times you may end up with a more moderate candidate or a candidate who doesn't really represent the most either Republican or Democratic leaning people in the in your party. So it's a purity move.
So this purity move, and I love the way that you put that, we're basically taking a whole set. And let me rephrase this. I think you would agree that there's been a growing number of folks that, you know, registered independent, and now they refer to it as something different today, because they're not happy with the party vibe, you know, either Democrats or Republicans, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that's the biggest trend really all across the country, is the rise of no party or non-affiliated voters. Younger voters are strongly aiming that way. Here in Louisiana, there are about already over 800,000 no party voters registered with the state. So it's the fastest growing, and it seems to be the wave of the future, which is odd given that the move in the legislature is towards closing those people out.
So this bill provides that 180 days prior to the opening of qualifying for the first party primary, that the political party would notify the Department of State that they either want to allow or not allow these no party voters to participate in their primary. Now, I read through the bill, and I don't know what the state of it is, but I was kind of looking, can they do this by each individual race? So if you have PSC openings running at the same time as the Supreme Court, can they say, we want to do this for the PSC but not for the Supreme Court?
No, they can't do that. So the way the bill's written, 906, House Bill 906, is it has to be the same for all races. So if the Democrats decide to exclude no party voters, then none of their races could include them.
For that particular election, right?
That's correct, yeah. And then the next election, they get to decide again, assuming they meet that 180-day window.
So that purity that you're talking about is very strategic. I mean, they can kind of assess what's out there, what's going on, what the mood of the may be, and decide, yeah, you know, we don't want to allow them this time because we think that there might be something going on here that we don't like.
Well, yeah, and that's true, and it can be used strategically. I mean, there's nothing more strategic than levering a two-term incumbent senator out of his seat. And, of course, I'm referring to Bill Cassidy here.
Right.
But having the closed primary was the single most important ingredient for making sure that he's not going to represent Louisiana. Arguably, in an open primary, he comes in first, or he comes in probably second, but maybe first.
Yeah, and so, you know, I was telling this story in, briefly in a monologue I did this morning. I think the big concern that I have is, what are the next races that they make this apply to? When I was the sheriff, I had the opportunity to meet a lot of sheriffs from a lot of states that ran through these closed primary systems. And I remember talking to this one gentleman who elected sheriff in Indiana. He said he sat on the sidelines for decades waiting for the opportunity to run for sheriff. The guy had a resume that was one of the most impressive that I've ever seen. I said, I don't understand. How does this work? He goes, if you don't have the party behind you, you have nothing. You can't win. You can't. There's no way that it'll happen. And to me, that seemed tragic. I mean, so many good people with good CVs or resumes that have a desire to offer themselves up to the public, not given the chance, because a few folks inside that party decide who gets to go and who doesn't.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. It's a hardcore party move. Of course, in Louisiana, when Edwin Edwards first instituted the jungle primary, it was in order to help the Democrats, you know, who were having to run all these races. So, you know, the move to not have party count specifically was also, you know, driven by party considerations. Now things have changed, and this move is driven by party considerations. So I guess you could argue both ways.
So what do you think the likelihood is that there's an expansion of offices that they're going to apply this to?
Well, I think the likelihood is over 50%. I mean, I was surprised that they didn't go for state legislative races and other races that, you know, take place in the state this time, and that it was so limited. But I think they're going to try to, you know, they're going to eat the pie one piece at a time. And I think that this was the first piece.
Well, because a lot of these folks that are sitting in there right now, they might not get the party's support, right?
I mean, right.
I'm sure you could name a dozen. I mean, you know, it's funny how that works, that they're voting in favor of this knowing that some of them themselves probably couldn't get the party support to be there.
Yeah, it seems very duplicitous. Like, I'm in now, so I'm going to make it so that other people can't come in and challenge me, you know. So it's very much self-serving. But, you know, a lot of what goes on in our government and legislature seems to be pretty self-serving. And I look at districting as example number one. This may be example number two. You know, rigging the districts to vote to elect people specifically, and then rigging the style of voting or the way the voting structure works in order to elect the people that you want to elect. You know, it's insider dealing, it feels like.
Nothing new. I mean, obviously, you know, it was interesting. For all the years that I was involved in politics, when I was at Tulane Law School, I took a class with Bubba Henry.
Yeah.
And we talked, he talked the entire semester about the inner workings of Congress. And I didn't realize how much the rules were set up for perpetuation of the party. You know, it really wasn't about issues in large measure. It was really about control. And totally. It seems like that this is what we're trying to mimic here today in Louisiana.
Well, if we get a, I hope not, but if we start to have a rules committee in the House, I think that's when you'll know we've really crossed the line into a completely new area, you know. But you're right, the U.S. Congress is very procedure and rules set up, and it really, as we can see with budget things and with reconciliation and all those kinds of things, it really limits the freedom that members have and so on. But because, see, Congress is a little bit of an outlier on this, not like us, because, you know, the provisions for their election are locked into the Constitution, which is much, much harder to change than it is for our legislature to pass a different kind of bill.
Yeah, which the only way that they can control the members, because they can't control the way that they're elected, right?
Right.
And I guess is the point that you're making, is by having those rules committees dictate what's going to obviously happen. But, you know, and the thing is, though, that if you don't, if you part with the party line, where does that leave you? Where do you know, here in the construct that we may end up with here if they move to make these legislative seats the same way? Your thoughts?
Well, it's pretty interesting in the sense that we've never had parliamentary style parties here in the United States, you know, because in part we haven't had that discipline. Once you're elected by the voters, you can go any direction you want. But so this is an attempt to get some party discipline, but starting at the other end with the voters themselves. So, okay, we can't stop your behavior once you're elected, but we can alter how you get elected, what the rules are under which you get there, and so on.
Right. And, you know, it's one of the reasons why I love watching Parliament, because it's, you know, the plurality that goes on there is, it, to me, very interesting to watch the dynamics and, you know, how that ultimately impacts the debates that are had and everything else. You don't see that here.
Right.
You know, much. You don't see it at all in Congress, and you just don't see it here in Louisiana either.
Yeah, we have a very different system, you know. I mean, the founders didn't anticipate political parties. And in fact, the founders inveighed against political parties. And then I guess because they're written into the nature of humans, we almost immediately broke into parties and things have been running along party lines ever since. But there were some real strangleholds in the 19th century. It feels like we're moving back in that direction in the 21st.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, and I know you talk to a lot of folks. I don't, even hardcore Republicans that I interact with, I don't have any of them telling me that they favor this approach. They actually enjoyed the freedom in a jungle primary to choose. Now, they didn't cross party lines very often, but there were opportunities and examples where they did, and they felt really good about it.
This is the odd thing about all this is that the jungle primary is quite popular with the electorate and with just people in general. People get outraged when they find out they can't vote for the party of their choice or vote for the politician of their choice. And the idea that just because I'm a Republican, I can't vote for, you know, Democrat or Independent X is outrageous to most people in Louisiana. It's like, it almost feels like fundamental rights are being taken away.
Pearson, we're speaking with Pearson Cross, Director of the School of Behavior and Social Sciences at the University of Louisiana, Monroe. The way that the state constitution is set up, could parish by parish decide their local elections to be done through a closed primary system? Do you know?
I think they could only decide that based on elections within that parish. And given that And
that's
given,
what I'm talking
you know,
about.
Yeah, there are very few. I mean, the elections that are within the parish would be for, you know, parish council or alderman or those kind
parish
of things.
Parish president.
Yeah, parish president. So I think the answer to that question is yes. I think they,
it would be.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting to see whether, you know, who might be the first parish that decides to do something like that.
Yeah.
You know, and what the construct of the parish may be, meaning the separation of an emerging, you know, party that's close to overcoming or, you know, another party to ensure, you know, that this other party wants to get the furthest to the right to separate from the furthest to the left.
Right. Well, you know, that impulse to separate from other people is still in American politics, but because of our single member districts, I mean, every position pretty much that we elect in the United States is a single member district, with some very few exceptions. So there's really, as long as we have that, there's a tendency to cohere towards the middle. So there's no reward for being the most conservative unless you can somehow block other voters who are less likely to be conservative and just have a party, a primary among your people.
Yeah. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see just how far this goes. I'm just kind of curious.
I'd like to see what Nancy Landry says about that parish or control of local elections issues. Because the Secretary of State, you know, as you know, supervises pretty much all elections in Louisiana to some extent, in terms of vote totals and all those other kinds of things and rules and et cetera. So I'd be very curious to see an opinion from the Secretary of State's office.
You know, because a lot of the folks, well, you know, it's interesting in some of the closed primary states, folks that I talk to, they kind of progress from these local offices, you know, which some of them refer to them as kind of sub offices, to get to these major offices, and the state legislature being one of them. And you come up through this party primary system through, you know, your local county elections, and the county party representatives have a lot of say in what actually happens there. It's kind of the same process replicated from the state, you know, to locals. And as fast as we're moving down this path today, I'm very curious as to how that's going to happen. I don't think the public's going to be in favor of it, but they don't organize. They're not really, I don't see any organized opposition to what's happening. These votes in the state legislature are almost unanimous, you know, amongst the Republicans.
Well, it should be noted that the committee that decided about the closed primary, it was a 4-3 committee decision. So there are people pushing back on this move, but they're certainly not the party in power.
Right. Absolutely. As always, truly appreciate your time, your insight. Thank you so much for joining us. Pearson Cross, Director of the School of Behavior and Social Sciences at the University of Louisiana, Monroe. Have a great week.
Thanks, you as well.
Thank you. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Love to hear from you. Stay with us. We'll be right back. And obviously, there are a number of folks both in Congress as well as here that are not happy with what's happening relative to the way that we are conducting elections. In fact, the Secretary of State Landry said, and I think I'm quoting her correctly, is that in essence, it's a private election. It's an election for the party's candidate. It's not really an election of your candidates. It's the party. So if you decide to be no party, they want to eliminate any opportunity that you may have to participate in the primary system. I remind you that when it gets to a general election, you can choose at that point in time. But that's, you know, kind of pretty far down the road. When you think about it. And obviously, we saw what some of the implications of that may be. And it's why, and I discussed this in my monologue this morning, about these blood oaths that we're swearing to individuals. And unfortunately, in the case of Julia Letlow and Donald Trump, it's going to be interesting to see how this is ultimately going to play out, because we have some very controversial measures and that are attempting to be passed, as well as attempting to be incorporated at the administration level as to where these individuals may be. What's in the best interest of Donald Trump is not necessarily what's in the best interest of the state of Louisiana. He's a lame duck president. We knew that when he was elected, that he was going to be a lame duck president from day one, right? And so what happens in the aftermath of this? And we're seeing that there's a lot of things being brought forward that work out well for him, but doesn't necessarily work out well for the state of Louisiana, or in some cases even for the Republican Party. And here we are, we're trying to go down this similar path now in the state of Louisiana, which I think a lot of folks like myself, I think about the opportunities that were presented for me, right, at certain points in time, having committed my life to public service. And to think that I would have to go and satisfy a group of individuals, some may be elected, some not, that I was the most appropriate candidate for them, and they could stand in the way of me wanting to run for public office unless I ran as an independent. And in those states where, you know, it has become very much this two-party system, there's no plurality government really running in a number of these states. Most, you know, are bicameral systems. Some are even unicameral system. I think there's one state that way. But totally reliant on the party politics. And it just doesn't make any sense. I always liked it, having the ability to vote for the individual. Not for who the party says is the individual, but for the individual. You know, and we look at the history of a lot of folks, you know, a lot of folks around here that are Republicans today were former Democrats, right? I mean, and John Kennedy probably doesn't like when I remind people of that. He was a Mike Dukakis delegate when Mike Dukakis ran for president of the United States. And we hear this now, well, you're a Republican in name only, you're a rhino, you're this, you didn't register as a Republican from day. Well, most people did. There are very few people I know in my generation that registered as a Republican first time out. You know, and this is an interesting observation too. Newell, if each party wants to hold private primaries, let them pay for it. But using tax dollars and taking a whole segment of our population and on a whim, maybe, deciding that they don't want to give them the opportunity to participate in primaries, that they can't. So maybe if we're going to go down this path, let the party pay for their primary elections and save the state some money. If they want to have so much say-so, and if we want to give them so much say-so as taxpayers, I would love to see that burden placed on them. You want to hold your party primary? You want to set the rules? You want to do this? You want to do it? Pay for it. Go do whatever you want to do. But don't expect, you know, the general public to have to decide, okay, do I have to be a Democrat or do I have to be Republican in order to participate in the election process so that my vote actually matters moving forward in the leadership of Supreme Court, Bessie, congressional races, Senate race, you know, in this state, let the party pay for it. They believe that it's so important to them. I'm a registered Republican. I just don't see it that important to me. I like being able to be independent and choose who I want to be for. And I've broken with the party several times. I'm a defrocked Republican, proud of it. But I feel good about the decisions that I made doing so. And I shouldn't have to enter into a blood oath with a party to be able to exercise my right to vote in primary elections. We'll be right back. Check in with Scoot when we return. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Art Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.